Campus 103.7 presents a collaboration between me, Patricia Salomone, and my friend Stephen Mangione, reviewing the book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth, by Stephen Mangione. In this review, another in the series A Book, A Thousand Stories, the author will take us along the Camino to Santiago de Compostela, telling of the human search for forgiveness, redemption, and love. Our listeners may remember my series under the title A Book, A Thousand Stories, in which I enjoyed sharing books that told a thousand stories with my listeners. After a long interval, here I am again. This time I review a book written by my friend Stephen Mangione, who will accompany us along the Camino to Santiago de Compostela as we review his book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth. While the story is totally fictitious, there is much to learn about the Camino, thanks to the author's careful description of the places, the people, the atmosphere. There is much to ponder about human sentiments, forgiveness, and love. In recent years, the Camino to Compostela has gained popularity. Some are attracted to the challenge as a form of exercise in the open countryside to enjoy sights, sounds, and smells so badly needed by people whose lives are mostly sedentary and burdened by city life. Others have a spiritual approach, reminiscent of the pilgrimages of time gone by. I imagine that many of the walkers keep a diary. I imagine that his meticulous diary keeping has allowed our author to write his book. So let us join Stephen on his recounting about a walk to Finisterre.
I had always dreamed of writing a book. COVID provided the opportunity. During the lockdown period, a friend put together a small group of 6 or 7 people interested in writing. We started creative writing sessions in September of 2020. I wanted my story to deal with the process of guilt, repentance, atonement, and forgiveness, which resonates a lot with me, in the sense that I believe in the ultimate need for and the benefit of forgiveness. I also wanted it to be with the backdrop of the Camino, both because I have derived so much from it and because I had so much background material in my diaries. The places I described in the book, as well as the people and the feelings, are almost all real as I recorded them in my diaries. Moreover, I saw the Camino as life in microcosm, where the journey was as important as the ultimate destination, like life itself.
Many are the ancient pilgrimage walks across Europe. The trail along Umbria, following the steps of St. Francis of Assisi, comes to mind, as part of the Via Francigena, so long and so difficult, as pilgrims walk all the way from Canterbury down through the Côte d'Or of France, across the Alps to Rome, and through the gorges of the Apennines, down to the very tip of Puglia at Santa Maria de Leuca, to cross the Mediterranean in their quest to reach the Holy Land, as did the Crusaders in the Middle Ages. But nowadays, when we say the Camino, it is the pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela that comes to mind and fires the imagination.
In the Iberian Peninsula, the main routes are called the Frances, the Norte, the Primitivo, the Via de la Plata, the Portuguese, and the Inglés. Outside Spain, the French routes from Paris, Arles, Vézelay, converge at Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port and at Saint-Paul, where there are passes across the Pyrenees Mountains. The best known and most frequented is the Camino Francés, with a length of just over 800 kilometers. The Primitivo is so called because it may have been the first Camino. It runs from Oviedo to Santiago.
As I embarked on reading The Path to Redemption, my imagination was fired by the names of medieval towns like Roncesvalles, Pamplona, Burgos, León, Santiago, Finisterre, as these evoke visions of knights in shining armor, medieval ladies, unforgiving queens, cruel bishops, and auto da fe. So to me, the fact that the Camino is addictive, as the author states, is quite understandable from this point of view. What I need to learn about more is the spiritual meaning. On this, the author will tell us much.
Originally, the Camino was purely a religious pilgrimage. People walked it out of devotion to the faith, and especially to St. James, as a penance to atone for their sins, or at a crisis in their lives. They would start from their homes and walk all the way to Santiago and back again. With the resurgence of interest in the Camino in the latter part of the 20th century, the motives impelling people to walk it are various: a love of trekking, exercise, interest in Spanish culture, meeting people from different nationalities and walks of life, and perhaps meeting a partner. The religious or spiritual factor is still there, albeit not as prevalent as before. However, the atmosphere surrounding the Camino evokes the religious fervor of the past. The great cathedrals, many churches and little chapels along the way, the mementos to pilgrims who died walking the way, the many monasteries which still accommodate pilgrims or provide religious services, and of course the culmination in Santiago Cathedral during the Misa de Peregrinos. But in addition to all this, there is the camaraderie, the relaxation of all the usual strictures and formalities of society, the communion with God, nature, and oneself. The tiredness, discomfort, and pain experienced also serve to make one more appreciative of one's normally comfortable life.
But the knight in this novel is not returning on horseback from a battle against the infidel. He is James, a busy, stressed Maltese businessman. James is overspeeding in his modern car after a hard day's work in a busy office where he is the boss. But we learn that there is also a romantic edge to the character of this busy man. His spare time, James loves to walk along the Maltese coastline as well as through the villages, stopping occasionally at one of the typical bars serving tea and coffee in glass tumblers, accompanied by delicious pastizzi. He loved to sit in these bars and exchange views with the usually very colorful patrons of the bar, discussing country life, politics, or whatever other topic caught his fancy at the time. One evening, in his anxiety to get home to his gin and tonic, James is the cause of a tragic accident which will turn his life upside down. The old woman appeared to be oblivious to her danger and just kept walking across the road. Suddenly there was a dull, sickening thud. In panic, James speeds away, hoping to forget the matter. His cowardly reaction shocks him into realizing how weak he can be. Sleepless nights follow. He could not believe that he had done this. Whatever could have come over him? He had always regarded himself as an upright and conscientious man, and who would never have imagined doing something like this. And yet, his sense of guilt tormented him, and he did not know where and how to seek redemption. How much of our author Stephen is there in James? James, like the author, is also a keen walker and a much-traveled man. Deep down, he is a good man who enjoys the beauty of nature. We find in him the author's own personality, his attachment to his native island Malta. He loved experiencing nature in all its forms, the trees, the flowers, the forests, the wildlife, the vagaries of the weather, and the smells and sounds of nature. In James, we can also detect the typical upbringing of a Catholic Maltese man of his generation, as in his mental state of confusion, James turns to a priest for advice. But when a documentary on National Geographic Channel catches his attention, this will open the way to redemption. It was a documentary about a pilgrimage in Spain. There were some amazing images of wide open countryside, mountains, plains, and small villages. The narrator was describing a walk which started in the south of France and extended all the way to a city in the west of Spain. The narrator explained the legend that the remains of St. James the Apostle had been discovered in the west of Spain sometime in the 9th century, and this had given rise to a pilgrimage. The character in the novel is Maria Mullen, a passionate and exuberant young woman in her late 30s. A typical middle-class single Maltese woman who has a decent job and is trying to put behind her a bad marriage which ended up in an unpleasant divorce. In the meantime, she dutifully helps to care for her elderly mother in the early stages of dementia. Maria takes turns with her older sister Joanna in looking after their mother. They had decided to try and keep her at home for as long as possible. Both of them tried to engage her in conversation, as she could sometimes fall into long periods of silence and introspection. So they tried to involve her in activities that exercised her brain. They thought this might help to slow the inexorable decline. This day it was Maria's turn to look after their mother. As soon as she arrived at her mother's home, her latest boyfriend John called and she stepped out on the balcony to have a conversation with him. The long and unpleasant conversation ended with a breakup. She told him this was the end. She stuck to her decision and reiterated that it was all over and that what she needed now was to get back to her mother. When Maria entered to the living room, her mother was no longer on the sofa, and the front door was open. It is somewhat shocking for the listener to realize at this stage that Maria's mother is the victim of the car accident. The author describes the explosion of feelings that Maria experiences on finding her mother huddled on the curb of the street, her shock and her fear as she accompanies her in the ambulance to the hospital, and her realization of the tragic event. How could anyone hit her and drive away? Incomprehensible and unforgivable. Maria is overcome by guilt feelings. Had she been doing what she was supposed to be doing, this may never have happened. She should have been watching her mother at all times. Because she had been careless, the old lady wandered out onto the road. Sharing her grief with her sister Joanna brings Maria some relief, but does not compensate for the sense of guilt. She found it hard to sleep, and more often than not, after she had slept, she would wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning, quite unable to go back to sleep. Maria's friend and colleague, Greta, will come up with a possible solution to Maria's desperate need for atonement. They are good friends, and they have traveled together occasionally. Greta reminds Maria of the wonderful time they had when they visited the Austrian Alps. They had used the lovely lakeside village of St. Wolfgang as a base, and each day they had gone on marvelous walks along the lakes and into the mountains of the region. They had enjoyed their glass of Grüner Veltliner wine at the end of a day of vigorous walking. Good quality wine is often mentioned in The Path to Redemption. We shall see that James enjoys the local wines in the ancient taverns as he stops to rest along his walk in Spain. Maria and Greta meet for coffee when Greta suggests, "You need something that will take you away from your present milieu and from your feelings of guilt. Something which could enable you to experience the expiation that you think you need. How would you feel about going on a pilgrimage, long and hard, the Camino to Santiago de Compostela?" After some perplexity and indecision, Maria accepts to walk the old medieval pilgrimage with her friend. They dismissed the idea of starting from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, which is where the Camino Frances is deemed to start, because they were reluctant to face an extremely grueling climb up the Pyrenees Mountains on the very first day of their walk. Maria and Greta decide they will walk from Pamplona in Spain. Maria started to count the days, hoping that this would bring the much-needed respite, a resolution of her feelings. In the end, Maria will go alone, as Greta has an unexpected hitch just when they are about to fly to Madrid. Both James and Maria, therefore, unknown to one another, desperately hope that they could learn to cope until perhaps the passage of time would make it more bearable. They need to forget and to get on with their lives. So, in one way or another, both decide to search for solace in walking the Camino de Compostela. A repeat of this week's program goes on air on Thursdays at 15 hours. We invite our listeners to join us next Monday at 18:30 for the second program, when James makes his preparations and his first steps along the hoped-for path to atonement.